Ulterior.
Hi, everybody. So we're at day four now. So part four of this 100 Best Songs of 2024 series. If you've missed any of the parts so far, Monday was part one. That was songs 100 to 81. Tuesday was songs 80 to 61. Yesterday, Wednesday, was songs 60 to 41. And now we are at 40 to 21. So the penultimate part, the installment where I would say that you're about to hear me talk about songs that were definitely in consideration for, you know, that top 20, top 15 spot. And truthfully, I think we're looking at, you know, maybe like two or three, even four songs, I'd have to go back and count, who actually like existed in top 10 at various points or another during the drafting of the list. So we're going to get into all that now. It's going to be fun. It's going to be exciting. Maybe at some points a little bit on a serious note, which I will let you guys know when that's about to happen. But yeah, thank you guys for tapping in and locking in. And I hope you guys enjoy this part. Number 40 is Disappear by Too Close to Touch. I mentioned this in a previous installment of the series, but something that I really enjoyed about the album from Too Close to Touch this year, Four Keeps, was the ability to kind of hear like different ideas from the band and what it would have sounded like had they been able to take those chances in the future. Whereas Disappear is very much so connected to the sounds and the ideas that I think we had already been able to hear out of Too Close to Touch in the past on records like Having Been Myself, Nerve Endings, and then all of the different parts of I'm Hard to Love, But So Are You. And when getting to hear like a new song in that style this year, it kind of hit me like, or it's hit me before definitely, but like maybe in a more grand manner this time around, where I'm like, there was probably no band in the world who did this kind of emotionally driven alternative rock slash post-hardcore the way that Too Close to Touch did, and emphasizing all of those somber points the way that Keaton did with his specific delivery and tone and pitch. And I definitely had already realized this beforehand, but it was one of those moments where I'm sitting there hearing Disappear and I'm like reminded again that Keaton was truly like one of the standout voices of this past generation of scene music. And there's definitely, you know, a lot more that I could say as far as like the impact of Keaton and what he meant to the scene and what Too Close to Touch was able to do for a lot of people. And I'm going to have more chances to like really, you know, focus in on all of that. So I'm going to save it for later. But what I will say now is that Disappear, it ended up being one of my favorite Too Close to Touch songs ever made. And like everything else on Four Keeps, a song that I was listening to and just thinking about how, you know, unfair everything is as it pertains to how this whole thing played out. Number 39 is Anything More Than Human by Bad Omens and Era.
Time.
I feel like adventurous is the term, or at least like the synonym of other terms that I've used in these past few days to describe Concrete Jungle, the OST, and the exact kind of endeavor that it was for Bad Omens, and how a lot of the collaborative efforts on that record steered away from what I would call like the traditional Bad Omens sound by this point. And I love all of those songs. I've already been able to talk about a couple of them on this series so far. But what about a song that is more in alignment with what we know Bad Omens to be? What about a song that knows when to scale it back and knows when to get heavy? And I look at Anything More Than Human as a song that embodies that spirit to a fucking T and to perfection. And then you bring in JT Cavey from Era, who really takes command of that second chorus and then the breakdown call, and how his screams feel like the perfect complementary piece to how immaculate Noah sounds throughout the entire song. I think it's one of those moments on Concrete Jungle, the OST, where I start to kind of get a glimpse maybe of like what the next rollout for an album could look like for Bad Omens sonically. And I just get like excited all over again. And then to kind of add on to like the significance of this song, when Bad Omens opened for Linkin Park about a month ago now in Arlington, JT was actually on stage with Bad Omens performing this song. And it was the first time this ever happened. And it was one of those things where I'm like, Bad Omens is really like taking their friends with them to the top. And I think that's a marvelous thing to see, very selfless by the band. And I think it really adds to, you know, the lore of Anything More Than Human and how incredible the song is and the kind of landmark that I think it's going to be for 2024 when people look back on this year. Number 38 is Blinding Faith by Knock Loose. Very few bands commanded attention in this year the way that Knock Loose did. I turned to Blinding Faith as like the moment where I think that realization was settling in, what this year was going to mean to them, because it was the beginning of the rollout for You Won't Go Before You're Supposed To, and the first chance that any of us had to see the artwork, and just how fucking cool and ominous it is. And then to go along with that atmosphere set by the artwork, we got Blinding Faith, and the music video and the song and everything about the packaging matches what we would later on know You Won't Go Before You're Supposed to be. I think Blinding Faith was the absolute correct way for Knock Loose to really start off this year and go into it with as much ferocity as they possibly could, while saving, you know, maybe certain other elements for later songs, which we will definitely get to. But Blinding Faith was just like, you know, that punch to the face of metalcore that I think, not that the genre needed it, because I'm not one of those people who's like, oh, metalcore bad, you know, but I think it was at the very least like as stern of a reminder as anybody could have gotten just who the fuck Bad Omens are and how much they mean to the scene when they lock in like this. There's a specific part of Blinding Faith right before the breakdown where it's kind of like one by one, different members of the band like scream out these lyrics, bend the knee, child of God, and then Brian has this guttural that sounds so fucking demonic, and again, so like appropriate to the setting that You Won't Go Before You're Supposed To was setting for itself in that moment. And I think Blinding Faith is one of the most important songs ever released by Knock Loose, because again, it marked the official beginning to what I think ended up being the biggest year for the band, and a year that is going to continue even beyond 2024. Number 37 is No Lamb Was Lost by Counterparts. So this song is the sequel to Whispers of Your Death, which was a part of the band's 2022 record, A Eulogy for Those Still Here, and it was written about Brennan's cat, Kuma, who very, very sadly passed away a few months after the song's release. And then something that I would say, like, is the correlation, or rather, like, a bit of correlation between that song, Whispers, and then now this song, No Lamb Was Lost, is that Whispers of Your Death was kind of, you know, relating to, like, I guess maybe the fear of losing Kuma. And so there was, like, a lot of the emotional tendencies of melodic hardcore that were put into that song, and it kind of created, like, this somber feeling. Whereas No Lamb Was Lost, now that it's about the death of Kuma and the grief that Brennan had to deal with and still has to deal with as it relates to that event, No Lamb Was Lost is just heavy and pissed off. And I think it really matches the tone that it's supposed to have given the subject matter and everything that relates to, you know, that song altogether. And I would say that No Lamb Was Lost has, like, some of the most, like, gut-wrenching lyricism on not just the EP, but probably the entire Counterparts discography. Without you, I'd have died. Without you, I would die. And just the hurt that you can hear in Brennan's voice when he screams those lyrics. And then later on, with my skin, he was saved. With my skin, she is saved. She is safe, referring to Brennan's new cat, Corey, and, you know, his dedication to protecting her. And it's something that I can relate to, like, quite fucking heavily, actually. I've talked about this so many times on the show, and I really don't want to ever again, but I'm going to now because of, like, the subject of, like, cats and this song and everything else. A couple years ago, my cat Mikasa passed away, and it was one of the hardest things I've ever had to deal with. Maybe it was the hardest, maybe I'm underselling that. And then now I have, you know, three cats with me who I am protecting and loving and doing everything that I did for Mikasa, and now I get to do for the three of them. And so the whole story about Whispers of Your Death and No Lamb Was Lost, it speaks to me on a very personal and heartfelt level. And it's probably weird to say heartfelt given how No Lamb Was Lost sounds. But when you really dig into the song and you really analyze what it is and what it means and all that other shit, and I admire everything about it. Number 36 is Frenemies by Stand Atlantic. I do believe that this was the final single released by Stan Atlantic ahead of the album Was Here, and it was the conclusion of a singles rollout that I think brought with it a lot of questions from people about, like, what is the direction of Was Here? What is it going to sound like? Because not every single is, you know, parallel to each other in terms of sound or ideas or structure or whatever the fuck else people look at for that kind of stuff. But for me, I never had any doubts about the singles rollout. I never really felt like there was any moment where Stand Atlantic was off key for anything. And then when Frenemies released, and again, it capped off that singles rollout, my excitement level for this record kind of reached an all-time high. And it's because of how I was able to attach myself to the style of Frenemies and how the electronic bits that you throw into this song, like, really spoke to a certain part of my brain that will always have a great affinity for, you know, electronic based scene music. I kind of said this in the text review on social media, or at least, like, to some degree, and I'm going to kind of reiterate it now because it probably might not make any sense when I'm, like, speaking it, but in my mind it does. Frenemies is, like, maybe the most that I've ever believed Stan Atlantic kind of sounded like Bring Me the Horizon, or at least have ideas that were maybe derived from Bring Me the Horizon, because there are some bits of Frenemies that remind me of Amo And given how Amo is my favorite album of all time, I think that's kind of one of the reasons why I was able to like immediately be drawn to Frenemies and be drawn to the catchiness of it and how it's not afraid to be heavy at times and kind of like counteract that the catchy pop sensibility that the song has in some of its moments. And there's a lot I could say about San Atlantic and the talent of everybody in this band and how I like maybe think that this year was the biggest year ever for them. I'm going to save some of those moments for a later time, but at the very least right now, I want to conclude this little excerpt and entry or whatever by saying that I think Frenemies is very comfortably a top five Stan Atlantic song ever made. Number 35 is Devil in the Details by Monument of a Memory. This was very definitively one of the most surprising songs of the year for me. And I say surprising, not in like a disrespectful way or anything like that, because when I reviewed the last album by Monument of a Memory 2 years ago called Harmony and Absolution, I mentioned there how I didn't really like, I couldn't connect to the band so much in that sound or the previous one that they had when Will Ramos was a member of the band. And it just felt like I could sense that the ideas were there and the potential was there, but maybe it wasn't like fully fleshed out yet. And then when Devil in the Details dropped earlier this year in February, it felt like there were so many steps that I would have imagined Monument of a Memory taking to get from Harmony and Absolution to this sound that they just like ran right through and skipped. To get from where they were at before to where they're at now off of a song like Devil in the Details, that in my mind would have been like a 5 year, 6 year process. Instead, their very next song thereafter that, they jump into the deep end with what I believe is the best song that Monument of a Memory have ever made. I fucking adore the ominous presence that the song sets for itself. It kind of reminds me in some ways of what Get Scared did on Demons. And I don't say that because there's a song on that album called Devil in the Details, but it just kind of like had like that effect on my brain. It's where it made my mind wander to when hearing how efficient this song sounded in taking on like a darker style and have that be the crux of the song. It feels larger than life at some points. It feels symphonic while capturing the essence and the magic of the metalcore genre in this day and age that I believe really, really works when a band is hitting that stride as heavily and effectively as Monument of a Memory did on this song. Number 34 is Everything You Wanted by If Not For Me. To me, this is the best song that If Not For Me have ever made. And when factoring in how I talked about the 2022 album Eulogy when I reviewed it, getting to a song like Everything You Wanted was, okay, pun fully intended, everything that I wanted out of If Not For Me and everything that it is about their sound that I find to be really captivating and really special to that sector of the genre that it feels like Thriller Records has like a stranglehold on right now. Because you look at the like the catalog of bands on that label, and how you have like Catch Your Breath and Until I Wake, who kind of have like a similar sound to If Not For Me, but I do not know if I have heard that sound be like captured in a bottle the way that we got it on Everything You Wanted. And how I feel like this is also the like the real showcase for Patrick and how he's been able to develop as a vocalist while the rest of the band around him like really masters the environment that they're setting for themselves, and just like the catchiness of the hook of Everything You Wanted, and how it's able to flow in a way that kind of matches everything that's happening vocally at the same time. I think Everything You Wanted, to kind of, you know, reiterate some of my earlier points, is the best song ever made by If Not For Me. It is the highest level that I think they've ever operated at. And I don't say that in any way to diminish the rest of the record, because I think it is a outstanding album that If Not For Me and Thriller Records delivered. But if I really hone in on this title track here, I think it is the perfect summarization of everything it is about, If Not For Me, and this specific style of metalcore that I think is being done absolutely fucking right these days. Number 33 is Defamation by Boys of Fall. I feel like it's a little bit hard to like try to box Boys of Fall into one certain category or genre, because I know at their core they're probably pop punk, but a song like Defamation really challenges that idea by embracing elements of metalcore and hardcore, and thus in turn making it like the heaviest pop punk song that I've talked about all year. And that's kind of a constant with Boys of Fall. They really like elevate their sound tremendously well that way. I think they've done that pretty much their entire tenure, and especially on the 2020 album Distant. But as far as Defamation goes, I think that like that oxymoronic style that it has, where, you know, it can kind of be like a somewhat like soothing and heartbreaking pop punk song at one point, and then the next it feels like as heavy as you know, certain metalcore songs being talked about on this list. And I really enjoy that dynamic, especially on Defamation, which I think is littered with some of the best moments in the entire library of Boys of Fall. I think it has one of the biggest choruses that the band has ever made, and one of the biggest choruses of the entire year. And just how like the song, even if it like vocally gets heavy at certain points, instrumentally it doesn't really. It kind of like stays true to what it sets out to be from the opening melody, and then even, you know, thereafter. I think Defamation is the kind of song that you could show somebody to give them idea of what Boys of Fall is, and also why Boys of Fall still have every potential to become somebody's favorite band through a track like Defamation, and through the ideas presented within it that I think are very like emblematic of who Boys of Fall are, who they've always wanted to be, and the concepts they bring with them that are really combative of pop punk. Number 32 is Our Love Was Like a Sad Song by Real Friends. Kind of spoke about this a little bit already, but one of my favorite things about Blue Hour this year was how it kind of took Real Friends from you know, where they were at before in the realm of pop punk, and gave them a very cool post-hardcore spin on much of what they did this year. I think Our Love Was Like a Sad Song is a great example of that. And it's an example without being like super heavy or like really leaning into it the same way that It Never Has Become Always did. And I think you kind of get a grasp of that right from the first 30 seconds of the song, because it's like primarily an acoustic guitar that supports the aggressive tone in Cody's voice, and then the eruption and the wall of sound that comes thereafter in the chorus. And I think Our Love Was Like a Sad Song. It is definitely, you know, a sad song, and it definitely has a lot of emotion that it draws out of a listener. But it's also just like so energetic, and it feels so anthemic, and it feels like the kind of song that would get an audience at a live show on its feet and moving and singing every word back to the band. And I love that kind of energy for this song. I love what Our Love Was Like a Sad Song represents, and what it meant to Blue Hour and Real Friends All Together this year, and in turn what it ended up meaning to me as being one of my favorite songs of the entire year, and, you know, one of the best Real Friends songs ever made, in my mind at least. Number 31 is Pulling Teeth by House of Protection. So truthfully, when I look at the track list for Galore, it sometimes kind of feels like, you know, put the names of the songs on a dartboard and throw a dart and see what sticks, or like put the songs in a hat and see what you pull out, because I think it's anybody's pick really when it comes to, you know, what is the best song on Galore, what is the most effective, what gets across the idea of debuting House of Protection the most well. And for me, it's Pulling Teeth, and it's kind of very much so been Pulling Teeth since the first time I heard the song. I think it's the kind of song where you can really sense like some of the tendencies of Jordan Fish's production be mixed in with the sound that Steven and Ark were going for. And I say that in a way where Jordan's complementary style to House of Protection, I think it really has a spotlight shining on it with Pulling Teeth. It has a super explosive chorus that is kind of divided into two sections, and the first part is very like energetic and, you know, kind of inspiring an audience to like jump up and down and all that other shit. And then the second part, I think, is one of like the like most dramatic of the entire year. And I say that because I love the way that it sounds. I love the big tones that it goes for. I love the atmosphere that it encompasses. It's just one of my favorite choruses of the entire year. And then the build-up to the breakdown is also just magnificently done, in my opinion. And then even the breakdown call of Nothing You Can Fix in the House of Protection, and then the actual breakdown that commences afterwards. Dude, I need to be in a live setting very fucking soon to hear that breakdown of Pulling Teeth be executed in person and with other, you know, enjoyers of this band around me. And I think Pulling Teeth is going to be the song that I immediately think of whenever I look back on the immaculate debut year that House of Protection had. Number 30 is They're All Around Us by Poppy. So I just gushed over a Jordan Fish production through Pulling Teeth by House of Protection, and I'm going to do the same thing again immediately now with They're All Around Us by Poppy, which I think is one of the best songs off of Negative Spaces, and the kind of song that somebody like myself who really adores like the heavier side of Poppy, I really needed to be able to hear something like this after, you know, Zig and Flux and those kinds of projects. Not that I didn't love them. I kind of mentioned this already in the review that I did for Negative Spaces last month, but this is still definitively my favorite style of Poppy. And it's the style of her that I was really like captivated by years ago. And whenever she does a song like They're All Around Us, that captivation, it still reaches like such a high point. And I think she's come along so well as an artist to where like this stuff, it should not at all feel gimmicky anymore to anybody. You know, maybe it did in the early stages of like Am I a Girl and Scary Mask and that kind of stuff. But now I think Poppy is fully fleshed out as one of the absolute like pillars and cornerstones of metalcore today. They're All Around Us, like it immediately starts off heavy with her screaming coward, and then the instrumentation that commences from there. The chorus on They're All Around Us, it feels like it's like there's like this world that is expanding and circulating around me, and I'm being like engulfed by the sounds and the ideas of Poppy and everything it is about They're All Around Us that I think was able to just like so perfectly set the stage for Negative Spaces and remind anybody who may have been in doubt about Poppy's capabilities just who she can be when she locks in on a heavy sound in this exact manner. Number 29 is Medicate Me by Rain City Drive featuring Rory Rodriguez from Dayseeker. Let's do some like peeling back the curtain type shit right quick so I can tell you guys that in the original stages of drafting this 100 best songs list, Medicate Me wasn't supposed to be here. I had already kind of had my mind made up about Disarm the Hourglass being the song from this album that I really wanted to like champion and back up on this list. And then this is going to sound fucking silly. I had a dream. I can't remember what was happening in the dream exactly, but the thing that I remember vividly about it was that Medicate Me was playing in it. And to me, that felt kind of like out of place because Medicate Me, it wasn't like a song that I was thinking about for the list. It wasn't a song that I had even listened to like the day before having that dream. There wasn't anything to really like make my mind think about Medicate or wander off in that direction. So maybe it was like a sign from like something or someone or somewhere to go back to Medicate Me and give it some a time and attention. It's like, you know that episode of SpongeBob where Sandy like gathers up a search party to find SpongeBob and Patrick says something like, he's not in my thoughts. And then Sandy says, well, think again. That's kind of what this moment was like for me. Because all that it took to like really lock in on Medicate Me and understand it the same way that I know so many people around me did was just listening to it again and again and again. Because when this song initially released, I liked it. I don't want to take anything away from that, you know? I did like it. I don't know if I loved it. I don't know if I fully understood, like, the claims made about people, or made from people about this being, like, the song of the summer for the scene, and, like, the best song by Rain City Drive to date. And I look at the streaming numbers on this bitch. It's like, alright, I'm gonna pull it up right quick, actually, because I have Spotify open. 21.6 million streams. And that's just Spotify, you know. I don't know, like, what the Apple Music count is at right now. I don't know what the YouTube video has. But the point there is that Medicate Me has taken off in a way that feels like viral. And it feels something, or it feels like something that, you know, breaks through, like, the glass ceiling of the scene. And when hearing it over and over again in the last few weeks, now it clicked. Now it became so easy to understand why. Because Matt McAndrew and Rory Rodriguez, that is a fucking superpower duo of vocalists. Like, that is Batman and Superman. That is Goku and Vegeta. Okay, you know how right now they keep calling Jameer Gibbs and David Montgomery Sonic and Knuckles? No. This is Sonic and Knuckles. This is the, like, the unison and the unity of two of the biggest and best and most powerful voices in the scene today, getting to compliment each other on a song that I think exists as one of the best, like, pop rock inspired alternative sounding songs that we've been able to have this decade. The chorus is just super infectious, and it's so hard to get it out of your head after you've heard it enough times. The way that Matt says, "Am I chasing a high that I won't live down?" and kind of repeating it over and over again, that's the part that, like, really is stuck in my membrane now. That is the crux of the song, and it's a big part of, like, what has made it to where, you know, again, just in the last few weeks, Medicate Me went from being a song that I thought was pretty good to a song that I cannot deny as a top 30 of the entire year. Number 28 is A Work of Art by Ice Nine Kills featuring Chavo from System of a Down. Alright, I'm just going to start this off the way that I really, really want to, as opposed to the way that maybe I should. You will never be able to tell me shit about Ice Nine Kills. There is no part of me that looks at this band as being, like, you know, cringe or like outplayed or gimmicky or, you know, whatever the fuck can be said online as, like, a point of argument for why Ice Nine Kills might not work anymore. I don't see it that way. And a part of why I don't see it that way is because of their consistency to still deliver songs like A Work of Art, and to be able to take their little concept of, like, paying homage to horror movies and now be able to, like, collaborate with the actual movie at the same time. And I say that because A Work of Art does play into the, like, the presentation of Terrifier 3 quite heavily, because you actually have, like, Art the Clown in the music video for this song, and the song feels like a very, like, extravagant piece of the Terrifier universe. It doesn't feel like, you know, other Ice Nine Kills songs off of the Silver Screams 1 and 2, where it's just the band, like, you know, tributing horror movies. This feels like a part of the movie, and a part of the rollout of it. I think it has one of the best choruses to date by Ice Nine Kills. The breakdown is so, like, just discombobulated and all over the place. And here's what I'll give any detractors of the song. I will give you that the breakdown is quite silly, but I look at it as, like, silly in a very endearing way, in a way that, like, drew me to the song even more. and Shavo from System of a Down being featured on here as a bassist, kind of like a unique way to go about a feature spot. He might have had like some creative input on like the song and the video even. I'd have to like, you know, actually look that up and have anybody fact check me on that. So I don't want to say that as like a factual statement. But either way, Shavo was an integral part to this song sounding the way that it does. And then you reach the final chorus on that track and the pitch change in it. And like when I heard that final chorus for the first time, my brain like just about fucking exploded. And again, as somebody who has constantly been amazed by Icekills with every song by them, by every project or, you know, whatever, I still find myself in those moments where I hear something such as the final chorus on a work of art and I'm captivated all over again by Icekills. And I realize then and there, like, just how much of a fucking mark I am for this band, and with no shame whatsoever, to be honest with you guys. Number 27 is Wither by Mallory Run. Getting to see that this song was being released and then actually hearing it made me happy as fuck, because Mallory Run is a band who I like really, really took a liking to their 2021 EP, Picture Perfect. And I think the song, the title track itself, Picture Perfect, was a top 20 song of that year. And so this was like a new project from that time frame that I was able to establish a connection to almost immediately after hearing the EP. And then there was like no activity from the band thereafter. So I kind of thought like, oh man, was this, you know, like a pandemic project that didn't pan out after the pandemic was over? In which case, you know, fair play, but also selfishly, I would have really, really enjoyed getting to hear more tracks by Mallory Run and be able to, you know, embrace this band all over again. And I had that opportunity this year with Wither, and it was like the band picked up right where they left off on Picture Perfect. It was like no time was missed in between the two releases, and I really, really enjoyed hearing those same tones from Picture Perfect that made me fall in love with this act. I think Wither has a lot of emotion going for it. It's very moving in how it's like structured and laid out. And I would say, like, if maybe you're unfamiliar with the sound of Mallory Run, think of, like, you know, a little bit of Movement, a little bit of Citizen. That's kind of the notion that I get out of Mallory Run. And with Wither, it just feels like so, I don't want to phrase this. I'm able to like put myself back in the time frame of May 2021 when I hear this song, and it's not really a time frame that I want to be back in, but I really, really appreciate having a song that I can like put on and use to kind of like reflect back on, you know, what my life was like at the time of Picture Perfect and how things have evolved and changed for, you know, better and worse since then. And Wither being the kind of song that I can use as a time capsule while a celebration of the present setting, that's like kind of priceless to me. Number 26 is Good Things Go by Linkin Park. The closing track of a Linkin Park album being the slowest song on that album is a formula that I will never lose any sort of lust for. I will never believe that that formula is not designed to just make buckets. It's just such an easy win. And getting to hear good things go as the concluding note on From Zero, an album that had already, like, you know, taken me on this wild emotional journey up to that point, given the context of being able to hear a Linkin Park song in, or a Linkin Park album rather, in big 2024, Good Things Go being the final thing that I got to hear off of it, that was really special to me. And I think this song, it might be like the best showcase on From Zero of the trade-off that we can expect in the future between Mike and Emily, and just how well their voices sound coinciding with one another, and then even in unison during the final stretch of the song. I think Mike's tone is as fucking solid as it's always been. Emily has this really enchanting tone to her parts, and then she kind of like raises her voice a little bit in the first and second choruses, and then it's in that final chorus where she starts to like really let loose and allow her voice to be, you know, maybe like a bit heavier than what the song is going for at that point, and then closing it off with the like the message of the song. Sometimes bad things take the place when good things go. And it's a message that you can apply to this album and the cycle of Linkin Park over the last 7 years in a multitude of ways, and then even apply it to, you know, where you've been at in your life and your own journeys. And I think that is one of the most beautiful things about Good Things Go. And it ended up being, in my mind, one of the definitive best closing tracks on any record this year. Number 25 is Negative Spaces by Poppy. The title track to Negative Spaces, I think, gave a very like new and fresh spin to the arsenal of Poppy, because we hadn't really ever heard her take on a song like this in the past. I think Negative Spaces has a lot of like power rock and power like pop rock influence going for it. It reminds me a lot of Celebrity Skin by Hole. The way that the song starts off, the way that the verse is structured, and how that leads into the chorus, I think it kind of gives off that like late 90s, early 2000s pop rock and alternative inspiration. And again, it's a sound that I would never have really like associated with Poppy. And if like somebody told me during the rollout for Negative Spaces that the title track was going to sound like that, I don't know if I would have been able to like fully capture the imagination in my head of what that would sound like. But getting to hear the actual song, this is like Poppy taking on a new challenge and just fucking delivering a home run on every aspect. There are so many parts of Negative Spaces that I turn to and think like, how did she come up with this? How did she know that this was a style and a sound that she wanted to explore? But the thing that I don't question is how it works, because of course it works, dude. It's fucking Poppy, and anything that she takes with her is going to work to this level. And given how heavy some of the other songs on this record are, I really, really admire getting a different side of her, like always. Number 24 is Red Leaves by Us in Motion. Us in Motion is one of the bands this year that like really came into their own and established a like a sense of power within my vision of 2024 and had a big influence on what songs and records from this year I'm going to be looking back on extremely fondly of. And Red Leaves is like right there near the top of the list, you know, evidently it being at 24. Us in Motion, they are super unique and super like difficult to talk about in words and terms, because I believe that this album, The Noble Rot, ended up being the most difficult that I've ever reviewed, because it was like I had to look at the record as like the score for a movie or a theater play, as opposed to a scene release that I could say, or rather like look at and review and judge in the same limelight as its contemporaries. And everything that I just said right now about like the theatrics of Us in Motion, you get that in fucking spades with Red Leaves, because of how this song is structured and delivered, and like those moments where it sounds heavy and then it like switches up to something that is very like touching in the way that it sounds. And the song being able to have that balance between, you know, raising its aggression and then also lowering it to a level where you kind of feel like sorrow within you. I think that's the main emotion and the main feeling that Red Leaves evokes out of listeners, or at least it evoked out of myself. And I believe that it ended up being the biggest and brightest moment on The Noble Rot, and to this day, the biggest song I have ever heard out of Us in Motion, and just an accomplishment altogether by this band. Number 23 is No Sympathy by The Oklahoma Kid. I feel like maybe by this point in the list, I have like kind of overused the phrase of like, this is the best song that so-and-so band or so-and-so artist has ever released. But I say that constantly because I feel like 2024 really did have a lot of the best songs that these bands have ever released, or at the very least my favorite they've ever released, rather. And I think No Sympathy is pretty clearly that for The Oklahoma Kid. And I've always really liked The Oklahoma Kid. I've always supported them. I've always wanted them to, you know, reach whatever heights it is that they desire. No Sympathy to me, though, like, this is their fucking song. You know, this is the song by the band that I turn to and say everything it is that you're going for sonically, lyrically, emotionally. No Sympathy hits all of those strides almost immediately from when the song starts. And I think when you look at like what The Oklahoma Kid has like kind of done with their sound, and how there are elements of metalcore, hardcore, and post-hardcore all blended into each other, I think No Sympathy is the like the perfect blend of all of that. And then when you get into like the song's lyricism and everything that it brings with it, and everything that Tom, the vocalist, is really speaking about, I think it does, you know, reflect back to the statement made on A Rising Empire's website about this song when it released, and how it challenges listeners to confront their emotions and take control of their own fate. And when speaking about a subject such as that one, I think it's required for the message to be relayed with the kind of anger and aggression that No Sympathy has. And there are so many moments in the song that, you know, even with its heaviness that's like consistently factored into it, It's one of the most moving and touching songs of the entire year, I believe, and the kind of song that I would hope that anybody who is, you know, in those spots where you would need to, like, control your own, or take control of your own fate, rather, and be your person, and be resilient to any outside forces telling you that you can't do this, you can't do that, you know, anything like that. I would hope that No Sympathy is the kind of song that you can wield with you and kind of use as a weapon to empower you. Number 22 is Life Goes On by 408.
Wipe your tears, I'll be alright. Life goes on and we'll be gone, but we'll always have the memories of us together. So here's to us and what it was. We can bottle up this moment here forever, 'cause when the song comes up,
so we're at 22 now, and I've said before that kind of by accident at first, but now by design, the number 22 spot on these 100 best songs list have become reserved for what I look at as the saddest songs of the year. And it's at number 22 because this is the highest that the song can go without making it into top 20 and without being the song that this part 4 episode is going to end on and have, you know, like, play us out, per se. So that's kind of why these songs usually go at 22. And that is my way of saying now that Life Goes On is the saddest song that I have listened to this year. Honestly, one of the saddest songs that I've ever listened to in my life. And the thing is, I don't know if it's actually supposed to be sad in that way. I definitely think it's meant to, like, draw some somberness out of a listener because it's an acoustic ballad, and those are usually the direction that those songs go into. The lyrics for Life Goes On, though, it kind of, like, paints a picture of, like, you know, somebody growing up and leaving home, and their loved ones are kind of sad to see them go, but the subject of the song is trying to reassure them that they're gonna be okay, and they'll be back, and, you know, kind of really bringing attention to the point of the song and its namesake of Life Goes On. And I feel like the chorus, you know, really speaks to that. Life goes on and we'll be gone, but we'll always have the memories of us together. So here's to us and what it was. We can bottle up this moment here forever, 'cause when the sun comes up, we'll have to say goodbye. Life goes on after tonight. And I think it's that closing bit that has, like, really, you know, made me feel the way about this song that I do. Life goes on after tonight. And no matter what happens, you know, any of the shitty events in life, it's gonna go on after tonight and into the next day. The world doesn't stop for anything, and I think that's something that, you know, a lot of us have to, like, very painfully realize when there are these hard-hitting events, that we wake up from the next day and understand that, you know, this thing happened, but we move forward now and we go on to the best of our abilities. And in, like, a super dark and ominous way, that message kind of brings into the picture, like, one's mortality. And I say that because, and I'm gonna be, like, super fucking real right now and honest, and I do apologize if that, like, brings out any emotion or whatever. This was a song that I was listening to when I found out that my grandfather was going to pass away. And when you go to the YouTube video for Life Goes On, the top comment as of right now is somebody saying that their mom had recently passed and this song was helping them. And so I look at, you know, how this song, at least in my eyes, does kind of, you know, have that that realization in it, I guess, that like life is going to go on after death. And I don't know if that's specifically what the song was like trying to allude to, but I think when you really dig into it and you look at, you know, the life events that people would have to move on from, that's what comes to mind. And for those reasons, Life Goes On became, you know, the saddest song of the year to me, but also like, I think just boiling it down to a sad song is kind of not doing it justice. It's also maybe the most meaningful of the year to me. It's also maybe, you know, like the most moving and the most touching and like the highest emotional note of the year and all the other stuff. I think Life Goes On is that powerful of a song. And to get it out of 408, who is a band that I've always looked at as like being a good pop punk band, but never would I have imagined that they would be able to release a song that struck me in my head, in my heart, the way that Life Goes On does. Number 21 is GAG by Stan Atlantic. So if a girl's a gun, girl's a gun, she's got me up in arms, up in arms. She's got me on my knees, yeah, rest in peace. Because that girl's a gun, she's here. Which stands for Girls a Gun, and I think this is another case of Stan Atlantic really taking this year and just fucking running with it and being whatever it is that they envision themselves of being in this setting. And GAG, it's very short in its runtime. I think it's only like a little bit beyond 2 minutes, but what Stan Atlantic did with that stretch and how they made one of the coolest songs I've ever heard by them, I think that is an accomplishment in and of itself. There's a very like clear separation between the sections of the song and the ideas, and how in the verses, there's like almost no instrumentation. It sounds like Bonnie just singing these lyrics aloud to herself, and then slowly but surely you start to hear the rest of the band be integrated into the chorus that uses its lyricism as like the crux of the song, and maybe, you know, one of the catchiest of the entire year. So if a girl's a gun, girl's a gun, she's got me up in arms, she's got me on my knees, y'all rest in peace, because that girl's a gun, she's hit and run. And I think there is a lot of charm in how different those choruses are in the song, because the first time around it's mostly just Bonnie's voice, and then you get some of the band coming in at the end, and then second chorus is where it really comes to life, and then by the third chorus the song has like fully been fleshed out and the vision with Girls a Gun is realized, and it's like the band having fun, and in turn myself as a listener, I am having as much fun as I ever have with a Stan Atlantic song through GAG. And it was so easy for me to look at this song and view it as a highlight of what's here and a highlight of all of 2024. And that's it. Those were songs 40 to 21. And all that is left to do now is get into the final part of this whole series. Top 20 songs, which will conclude with me naming the 2024 Ulterior Song of the Year. If you have been along with this journey at any point over the last couple of days, like always, cannot thank you enough for actually, you know, dedicating any time and attention to just hearing what some fucking weirdo like myself has to say about scene music. And now we get into the final part, and that part I would imagine is going to be longer in the runtime. It is going to be comprised of me waffling to a greater extent, but I don't want to apologize for that, because these songs are in top 20 for a reason. And as we progress through the list, I believe that I will be speaking about some of the greatest songs ever made in the scene and songs that I'm going to be listening to for the remainder of my life. Thank you guys so much. And again, still don't know how to conclude episodes anymore. Just have a good day. Have a really, really, really fucking good day.